is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Lions Collective, another episode. We are live Wednesdays at 6 p.m. I'm your host, Jeff Iafredi from Crunch Time Sports. We got Detroit Football Network Zone, Justin Rogers, The Athletic Zone, Colton Palancino, and of course, 97.1 The Ticket Zone, Will Birchfield. And I think this is a new setting, technically. So this would be number, 15, I think, on the year so far for Will.
But baby. We're inside the walls of Allen Park right now, and we got a couple Lions legends joining the show. Of course, the great Herman Moore over my left shoulder, and the even greater Lou Kriegmer over my right shoulder, who turns out is one of the greatest offensive linemen in Lions history, but unfortunately is neither alive nor available for Sunday's game. So we did do a little bit of research beforehand, and it does not appear that Lou Kriegmer will be the answer to Lions fans' prayers Sunday in Washington.
Hey, I got a really important question before
from heaven above. They were like, "Nah, hey, look, it's a second round pick, man."
If Tom Brady's cloning his dog, I think there's an opening here. I got an important question before we get too far away from it. But am I the only one, as soon as Jeff hits the start button, that just starts bumping to our beat?
Yeah, like,
I can't help but dance a little bit in the room.
I feel like the Eagles when they played Meek Mill, Dreams and Nightmares, during the Super Bowl run in 2017. The whole city vibing.
If I were a baseball player, that would be my walk-up song for sure.
That would go hard.
Yeah. I think I don't know if podcast introductions can win like a musical award. Like, this thing should get a Grammy. Whoever produced this intro music, man. I'm just gonna give the credit to Mustafa. He deserves all the credit.
Mustafa,
he just gets the credit for that one.
I think though, for the season finale, we should get the Ford Field PA guy to do player intros for all of us.
We'll walk
out to a personalized intro.
Yeah, or the next Dog and Pony Show, we could do it from there.
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
This is a good time to tell the story where we got just a banger intro for our last podcast. Will and I did. They produced something awesome, had all these Dan Miller clips in there. And then 1 week later, like, yo, you can't use this. NFL said, nope.
Yeah, so, violated seven NFL codes.
Then we had no intro for months. Perfect.
Incredible.
Yeah. I mean, with AI now, I mean, we should have like Will catching a touchdown. I mean, you could do so many things with AI now, man. We should just make our own.
AI for that, dog.
Yeah. This is a much anticipated episode, I'm assuming, from the people, and I guess for me personally, because, you know, it was trade deadline yesterday, 4 o'clock it ended. I went live for 2 hours, up until 4 o'clock. Don't ask me why. It was a productive show of literally nothing. But you know what? That's why we're here today, is to discuss why the nothing happened and kind of give more context. We'll also kind of give our thoughts on how the Lions can bounce back from last week's loss against the Minnesota Vikings. They obviously have a rematch with the Commanders, although it's not the same Commanders team. Of course, Jaden Daniels is out for the year, expectedly with that dislocated elbow. And they're dealing with some injuries. I'm just going to say right now, I don't know why Frankie Louvu was getting suspended. I just disagree. I don't even know why. I just don't want to. So if we could revert that and make sure he's suspended, that'd be nice. But we'll start with kind of what happened yesterday. It's the big news. Nothing for the Lions. They actually, the big move, and I was getting tagged while I was live, was Jeff, Jack Conley. Watch out. All right. Jack Conley.
One BC guard down, another one in. That's how we roll.
Jack Conley was brought to the practice squad. But what's kind of your guys? Now we're 24 hours removed from yesterday. What's kind of been your takeaway speaking now to Dan Campbell and just getting a vibe for the Lions here?
I think collectively, we didn't expect a whole lot until maybe Christian Mahogany went down. Then you're like, hold on. Maybe there's room here. And then you hear he's going to be back too. And, I poked a little bit into the idea of the trade deadline a couple of weeks back. And you just look at this roster Brett Holmes built, right? And it's pretty damn deep just about everywhere. And the areas where you were like, I don't really know about the quality, the depth here, safety being one. Like, those dudes came in and they balled when they had to and maybe answered some questions. And so you look at the offensive line as maybe the one spot where, like, maybe it would have been good to kind of patch that up. You've got a couple guys in Coyote Awosika and Tristan Colon who have starting experience, right? There's value, there's quality depth at some level there, but maybe could have got a little bit better. But Campbell pointed out Monday or Tuesday, that offensive linemen don't get traded very much at the deadline. And we see that the one that gets dealed is Trevor Penning. Look at that. You go sixth round pick for a guy with center, or I'm sorry, guard tackle flexibility. Like, okay. But I don't watch Trevor Penning. I'm not going to tell you I know a lot about Trevor Penning. That'd be BS on my part, but I can look at Pro Football Focus's kind of grades on him and see that he's average to below average. And so great. That's, you're trading what for another Coyote Awosika? I mean, what's the point? And so I just think at the end of the day, and I sit back and looked at it, I just wasn't surprised by the lack of activity by the Lions.
Yeah, when I look at the trade deadline, I feel like it's more a time for teams that are a bit desperate. You know, I think if you're building your roster the right way, you don't need to like go all in, as people like to say, on a move at the deadline. And I don't know how many moves you can make that would count as that. I think we saw a couple of them yesterday, like the Colts certainly trading for Sauce Gardner. I saw a lot of people say, why didn't the Lions trade for him? No.
Yeah.
No, that's never going to happen. Their corners are pretty good when they're healthy, and you know, they invest a lot of resources and money in that position. So,
and they like two first round picks.
Yeah. And would you like to give up two first round picks for Sauce Gardner and pay him? And it costs you some other players, as we talked about last week's episode. Probably not. So, I don't think there are like too many like earth shattering moves. Now, I guess where my mind goes is you see a lot of good players get traded for, you know, third round pick. We saw Jalen Phillips go to the Eagles. For a third rounder, Phillips has had back-to-back season-ending injuries, and you know, that's still kind of lingering a little bit. And he's a good player when he is healthy, but the Eagles had to make that move sort of out of desperation because their pass rush was pretty abysmal. Lions aren't in that situation right now. They like what they've gotten out of their pass rush. They really and going back to, you know, that needs-based trade deadline perspective, I don't think the Lions are at that point because they really worked to address their depth issues in free agency this past season and with the draft. Getting a Tyleek Williams, who you can afford to kind of bring it off the bench now that Aleem's back. Roy Lopez been part of that rotation since the beginning of the season. You know, linebackers, that's probably one of the deepest positions on the team. I think that was an issue last year, obviously, with injuries, but they're pretty set there, and they're getting guys back. The secondary has been beaten up this year, but they've also played pretty well. They're backups, and they signed these guys for a reason, a rocky scene in the offseason. You know, Amik can kick out to the outside. You bring him in a couple years ago, like, they've kind of built this thing in a way that you don't need to rely on making those moves at the deadline. Now, that said, I saw a lot of people talk about the Isaac Tislau trade and bringing that up to the equation nowadays with the trade deadline coming up and those lack of third round picks. I don't think they could have made a move like Jalen Phillips because they don't have the thirds. And it's like, do you want to give up a second to beat the Eagles? Probably not. So part of it is, you know, opportunity cost when you're going up to get a guy like that. And I still think Tislau is going to be a piece down the road, and we'll talk about him later. But you know, in terms of where they're at, it makes perfect sense to me. They said they're probably not going to make a crazy move or anything like that, and they didn't. And people still found a way to be mad at that. So, and the other thing is these deals don't guarantee success. I mean, look at some of the moves from last year with the Ravens going out and getting Deontay Johnson, and that messed with their chemistry, and they had to suspend him for a game because he didn't want to go in the game. You see the Bills trade for Amari Cooper last year, and his 17 pace was like 43 catches for 631 yards after they traded for him. So, doesn't always guarantee success if you do make a move. So, you know, they're relying on the guys they have, and I think it's admirable in some ways, but that's always been who they are. And, you know, Dan said himself, they're not going to deviate from that.
Yeah, I'll take the stance of the people just for a minute, just to play devil's advocate here. And I think the reason most of them were upset yesterday was because suddenly there was a glaring hole on the offensive line. And when the Lions, Dan Campbell made the comment that they probably weren't expecting any major activity, that was before they lost left guard Christian Mahogany for most of, if not all of, the rest of the season. It sounds like late December is the earliest best case return for him. And all of a sudden, if there was ever a year in which the Lions could make an urgent move at a position of need, it felt like this year in guard was the time to do it. And I agree, Colton, like this is not a desperate team. This is not a desperate roster, but I think you could argue that this is a little bit dire on the offensive line right now. I mean, they're entering a really important month of the season with, you know, a battered, aging left tackle and Taylor Decker, a backup at left guard now, and Awosika most likely, a battered in his own right, and some might say declining center in Graham Glasgow, a rookie right guard who's played well in Tate Ratledge, and then obviously an absolute stud at right tackle in Penei Sewell. And I don't know if all of those parts together add up to the kind of offensive line this team needs when their identity is built so squarely around it. And you know, I think that there were players that made sense for the Lions to call on at guard and may have cost them a second round pick because they didn't have a third round pick to present in talks. And you know, I think in the case of, let's just take Joe Bitonio, that would have made sense to me. Now, what we don't know is whether those players, Bitonio, Wyatt Teller, I mentioned John Simpson from the Jets, and there were some others too, Kevin Zeitler, were available. We just don't. And you know, I think in a lot of cases, those long tenured veterans who have played for one team have the say. Like they probably, that you know, those front offices probably ask those players, are you open? Are you amenable to a move? And if those players decide they'd rather just stay put where they are because of family and personal reasons, you have no choice but to respect. I mean, you have a choice, but I think most front offices would indeed respect that. So it's hard to really dissect this without knowing which players they called on and which players were available. But I understand the fan frustration, because this to me felt like the perfect time for the Lions to strike at a clear position of weakness, to turn this offensive line back into a strength. And I understand that they're banking on familiarity being more beneficial up front than inserting a new face at the cost of draft capital. But if that new face had been a legitimate starting level player in the NFL, you'd feel better about this offensive line today and over the next couple of months than you do right now. I'll mention this. Like there's so many ways to measure and gauge offenses these days, from the more basic stats like points per game, yards per game, to some of the more advanced stuff like EPA per drop back or adjusted rushing success rate. But maybe the most
stats.
They all have value and they all mean something and they're all worth mentioning in different ways. But maybe the most telling stat for an offense is third down. And I know we've talked about this for a long time. The Lions now rank 25th on third down. But just to put that into context, I went back and looked yesterday at the four teams that have made conference championship weekend over the last 10 years and where they've ranked that season in third down conversion rate. And you have to go back 5 years to find the last time a team made conference championship weekend with a third down offense that ranked in the bottom half of the league. And you have to go back 10 years to find the last time that a team made conference championship weekend with a third down offense that ranked in the bottom third of the league. And so right now, as currently operating, I don't think this offense is championship weekend caliber. And I think a lot of that stems from their issues running the ball, especially on early downs. And look, I was on this very same podcast last week championing the play of Tate Ratledge and Christian Mahogany and sort of the stabilizing presence of Graham Glasgow. So I don't want to completely contradict what I said then, but it's clear that they have not consistently run the ball well now for about five games, really ever since the Ravens game. And it's been a boom or bust rushing attack. And if you just, and you can't do this, but if you just eliminate the Jahmyr Gibbs 78-yard touchdown on Monday night against the Buccaneers, for five games now, this offense has averaged 3.5 yards per carry, which over the season would be dead last. And that's really, really jarring to hear for a team in an offensive line that has played bully ball and has rammed the ball down teams' throats, for the better part of 4 or 5 years. And I don't know. I'm not saying they can't. I'm not saying it will. I don't know if this offensive line can make the corrections they need to internally. And it's why I felt like it was just the right time to even pay more than you feel like you should have to for a legitimate guard to plug in there. And again, who knows if those guys were legitimately available. But I understand why this year in particular fans were angry, because the Lions didn't make a move when there was such a clear reason to make one at a position that's become a deficiency.
Will almost got us to 0.3 on the talking. He was almost ready to go to Terry and Arnold. So skip right through the offensive line.
He was cooking.
And we were going to let him
go. No, just the other side of things. Like that's why.
Look, I started writing down some points. I'm going to try to rifle through them really quickly here because I don't want to hold up the conversation too much. But I loved the Sauce Gardner trade for both sides.
Yes.
Thought it was one of those perfect trades for both sides. You took a contender. You got a young piece under contract for 2030, 25-year-old all-pro for two firsts. That's the right move for both sides. Jets did good. Colts did good. Colts lack star power. That's why they could go out and do that. They had the cap space. They don't have 10 guys they drafted and developed that deserve max contracts that the Lions do. That's why the Lions weren't in play there. And then, you know, I don't know if Lions fans were super enamored with Jalen Phillips. I don't know. But what I will tell you is Hutchinson's not leaving the field ever, apparently, because he played 100% this week. And Phillips is really redundant to Elkhorn Muhammad, who we've talked about all year. He's playing really, really well. So Phillips wasn't a fit here. I admittedly was on the Trey Hendrickson bandwagon until that hip cropped up, you know, and once that hip injury cropped up, that guy doesn't miss time. He's missed multiple games or part of one, full another. He hasn't had more than two pressures since week three. Like, that takes that off the table. So I don't think there was edge rushing help that the Lions missed out on. And then a guard, right? We're all talking about guard. It's really nice that the Browns asked Joel Batonio whether he wants to hang around Cleveland for his children and his grandchildren, which I assume he has now at age 34 or 35 or however it is. But, like, it goes back. I'd say no guards were traded yesterday, but Penning was playing left guard. But yeah, not a good run blocker. And what do we know about offensive line play, guys? It's so hinging on chemistry. Well, you drop a new body in there that doesn't know anybody, and, like, you could talk about Amari Cooper having, you know, a terrible 17-game pace. What is a guard going to do when you really hinges on how he interacts with the center and the left tackle? Wouldn't you rather have somebody that's practiced with those guys, that knows those guys, that's played in meaningful games with those guys, and, you know, at least has a feel for it? If all things are equal, give me the guy that has built some chemistry. And then finally, just because you brought up the third down number, I believe it was you, Will, that brought up to Jared Goff today that the third down and the points don't mesh, right? Like, they're still third in offensive scoring. I think second in scoring overall because the Cowboys had a down game. Like, I'd be very curious when you look back at the teams that, you know, had third down success, like, where did they rank in scoring? Like, the Lions are still getting it done. What it really boils down to is, it's what we've been talking about. They're explosive and inefficient. David Shaw, the passing game coordinator, put it perfect today. They have these big plays in the passing game. They have these big plays in the run game. They need to find efficiency more than the 3.5 yards per carry number you brought up. The efficiency metrics really, really bother me as an observer, because that's a supremely talented backfield, and they have far too many breakdowns. Not one guy, every guy, have far too many breakdowns to get to be this inefficient, and it's hindering the entire offense.
Yeah, but J-Raj, if they rank 25th in third down offense by week 17, I can assure you they won't rank second in scoring anymore. Like, if this is the trend that they follow for the rest of the season, that will be at best by that point, top 15 scoring offense, and maybe even below that. Like, I think we've all felt some uncertainties and misgivings about this offense this year, and it stems a lot from third down. That point total is inflated by a lot of drives that have started in plus territory because this defense has been opportunistic. So I put more stock in what they've shown us on third down than that overall gross scoring output.
And I think third down boils down to third and long, right? Like, I looked at the numbers. They're about equal in third and short. They're about equal in third and medium. It's those third and longs. They completed one finally third and 10 and beyond, but they were 0 for 23, 24 before that. Like, it's got to be first down and second down too. That's why you have third down problems.
David Shaw had a good analogy. He's a basketball guy, apparently. He said, you know, they're hitting the three pointers and they're making the layups, but it's the mid range game that they need to work on. And you can argue whether the mid range is the most efficient game in the current NBA, and if they're actually hitting three pointers. Because I don't know, I feel like a three pointer might be an explosive, and they're 18th in explosive play rate. But I think maybe if he's equating three pointers to red zone efficiency, then he's right, because they're still top five in red zone efficiency. They're scoring when they get there. Burchin made a good point about how the defense is setting them up. I think the Lions have the second best average starting field position on average in the NFL, so they are being put in good situations. I would say the offense actually put them in a bad spot, put the defense in a bad spot in the last game. So you're seeing some of that. But just going back to the offensive line real quick, like just to echo a little bit of what Justin said, I understand like both sides of it. Like if there was a move to get a guy, I think it would make sense. Just the lack of thirds probably made it a little bit tougher again. And it is hard to bring in a guy here. The Lions run so much out of the run game. They do everything. Yeah. They're probably the most diverse run game in the NFL. Bringing a guy from another team and asking him to learn that and gain that chemistry on the fly is kind of tough when they've already had those communication issues already, as we've seen, that are still an issue in week 9. So that's the only thing I would say. If there was a guy like you mentioned, maybe Kevin Zeitler, Evan Brown in Arizona, he still knows this offense a little bit. If there's a guy like that they could have gotten and it made sense and he has familiarity with the offense, I would have been all for it. But we're not privy to those conversations and what the asking price is, or even if those guys were on the block, so to speak. So that's the only thing with the offensive line. I totally understand it. And like, it would have made a lot of sense for them, but I'm looking at some of the pieces they have now, and Miles Frazier's coming back. And I like Tristan Colon a lot, not just cause he's a Mizzou guy, but you know, he's got some starting experience.
Lies.
That is a lie, but that definitely adds to it. But I mean, he's got some starting experience, so they've got some interesting options in terms of like depth that they built at guard, probably more so than a lot of teams around the league. So what Campbell said, like, we're going to, you know, let our guys prove that they can't do it. And if they can't, then we'll move on to the next. But there is a belief in what they have in the group that they brought in here for a reason.
Yeah.
You know why I like Tristan Colon there, Colton? It's because
it's a great quote.
I threw an absolute dart at offensive linemen that could fit this team in free agency, saying like, they don't need anybody. Like, here's a backup that makes sense. And boom, Brad signs them. So that's why I like Tristan Colon.
Makes you look smart. There you go.
So counterpoint, Colton, to your counterpoint of my counterpoint, and then I swear this is the last I'll say on this topic. I agree that it might have looked sloppy at first if you had just kind of parachuted in a guard here. I think that you also could have assumed that by December or January, it would have looked much better, and that by then, that version of the offense would be able to reach a higher level than maybe what you have in place now. It felt a little bit to me like the Lions prioritize maybe the floor a little bit more than, say, the ceiling.
Yeah, I guess sir.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, Will took the point of view of the fan. I was going to come and take the point of view.
Still can.
I fell on the sword for you.
Yeah, you know, that's why I love you, Will. I will mention this, and this is just something I've been thinking about because, it is a copycat league in the NFL, so you tend to look at trends. And for me, you know, I look at Super Bowl winners and I look at teams that have had success at the highest level. And you kind of look at how maybe those teams are structured or what their approach was. And I guess the question I have, and it's more of a, it's not saying that it can't happen the way Brad's doing it, but it is something I am eager to see because, you know, if you look at the last 8 years, 9 year Super Bowl winners, half of them's Tom Brady, half of them's Patrick Mahomes. So if we just take those two out of the equation, you're looking at essentially the Eagles with Howie Roseman and then Les Snead with Matthew Stafford, but take out the quarterback, just Les Snead. And it seems like those two have a very similar approach when it comes to being a general manager, which is they can draft. I mean, the Rams didn't have a first round pick for a decade, it seemed like, and Les Snead rebuilt his entire roster. Not saying you have to do that, by the way. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that's what happened. Yeah. And Howie Roseman can obviously draft as well, but it seems like, you know, Brad has that in common. He can draft. They're aggressive in the draft, which Brad is. It just seems like Brad, for whatever reason, is just a little more hesitant on being more aggressive when it comes to acquiring talent. I know the big theme with the Lions is they want to make sure that it's their guys. They like homegrown talent, which he's done a really good job with. I guess I'm just curious to see, you know, and I know they talk about a window, but we all know windows are real in the NFL, whether people want to admit it or not. It just might be a longer window the way the Lions have built their roster. But I guess for me, I'm just eager to see that with Brad's approach of the kind of draft develop. If you can ultimately win a Super Bowl that way without being aggressive, and I'm not saying Sauce Gardner, by the way, those people, all due respect, are not very bright. But the point I'm trying to make is you go out and take risks. I thought Howie Roseman had a great press conference yesterday when he talked about kind of his perspective. And I know Howie's once, you know, he's his own type of GM and he's been there for a while, so he can kind of do whatever he wants and he won't get fired. But he talked about how you can't get to the top without taking some sort of risk. And I guess Brad Holmes, I'm eager to see whether or not over time he starts to maybe adapt to that more, not to be, you know, full edge, get rid of every first round pick, but just take more risks, because I think he's such a good general manager and we've seen it. Like, if he does make a mistake, he can bounce back from it. So that's the question I have is, can you win a Super Bowl the way Brad's doing it? Or do you have to do maybe a Les Snead or a Howie Roseman type of approach, which has worked? Because it's hard to win a Super Bowl and have this sustained success if you don't have a Hall of Fame quarterback or one of the best quarterbacks, actually. It'll make it even worse. And one of the best all-time coaches. So that's where I guess I'm coming from. And I would like to think that some fans are coming from is like, and they haven't seen it, obviously, in Detroit. So maybe there's more you're more skeptical that way. You haven't seen proof of it, but
yeah,
that's where I tend to question things and just see if this works out.
See, I think the Rams, it's just not a comparable situation. They legitimately had an aging window. They had Aaron Donald already kind of floating, retirement talk, Matthew Stafford. You didn't know how long you had, how long the back would hold up. And they just went all in on that program. And what happened? They won a Super Bowl. That makes everything worth it, right? But then they fall to 5 wins the next year. And, you know, haven't, I mean, they've been good the last couple of years. They've won 10 games,
but they're contenders again now.
Yeah. I don't know if legit Super Bowl contenders, they're in that like second tier. Right. And then
pretty good to me.
Yeah.
Matthew, J-Rod, come on.
Matthew is locked down Hall of Fame to me.
They have every chance to make championship weekend. The Lions do.
Yeah. Okay. Stafford's in the MVP race right now. He's balling.
100% agree. And then the Philly situation is interesting too, because I think that's where we're looking at the Lions getting in a couple years, where the Eagles have spent and spent and spent on retaining their own guys and finally reached a point where they can't, right? And what did they do this offseason? They had to let go of, I don't know why I was going to say Isaiah Rodgers first, but Isaiah Rodgers, Milton Williams. Josh Sweat. You know, these two guys that were critical to Super Bowl. They had to cut Darius Slay. They had to cut the other cornerback, that Bradbury, who, by the way, didn't play last year, but like that was their big, big signing. Like they're out of house money, so to speak. And so they had to let all these guys go, and Howie's just trying to patchwork it now. And the Lions aren't there. Like, the Lions aren't having to patchwork. They had to patchwork last year. That's why they went out and got Za'Darius Smith. They had to, right? They lost Marcus Davenport. They lost Aiden Hutchinson. Yeah. They had to go get that guy. That's not where they're at. So kudos to Howie for doing that. Like, that's what he has to do to get through kind of what their cap situation is. But the Lions, instead of trading for, you know, Phillips, gave $180 million to Hutchinson, right? And that's one of, I've lost track of how many extensions they've given, but all these core guys outside of Jared Goff are still pups, really, in this league. They've got a long runway, and I would argue that Jared Goff probably has 5+ years of premium football left, and so it's just not the same. The windows of these teams are not the same. The window for Philadelphia is dictated by their cap situation. The window of Los Angeles was dictated by age. And so, you know, that adds to the decreased urgency. And so Campbell says today, right, I don't want to ever shut the door on the F them pick strategy somewhere down the road. But without him saying, with me saying it, now is not the time for that.
I feel like the biggest difference between Brad and Howie is, like, Brad, when he collects picks, like, he obviously was getting 2 comp picks for Aaron Glenn, and packaged those for Isaac Tislot. We've seen him go up to get, you know, Giovanni Manu, you know, Broderick Martin. Like, he likes to package sort of those late day 2, day 3 picks on prospects in that draft, or, you know, just getting players that he likes that are kind of in that last bucket of player at a certain point in the draft. But we see what Howie does is he will take those comp picks that he's getting for guys leaving, and he uses that as chips to go improve the roster in the season or before the season. And I think that's sort of a philosophical difference. And I wouldn't say one's exactly better than the other. But if you are going to look at Brad and just how he's using it, like, yeah, they didn't have a couple 3rd-round picks. You could have used those, that ammo, to go get somebody to improve your roster midseason. But he told us in April, hey, we just don't have 3rd-round picks next year. Like, I'm comfortable with that. And that's sort of where they're at. I think you could also argue, like, they got Carlton Davis in the offseason for a 3rd-round pick. You. Like, you can get a year of a good player in the offseason with that same capital that you're using to draft a receiver that's not really doing anything for you right now. And I'm not saying that's a bad pick, because I really like to saw it for down the road. Makes a little bit less sense if you extend JMO, which they did, but I still see the vision with him, and you end up getting Mahogany, or not, Miles Frazier, I should say, with an extra pick from that trade as well. So you know, just different philosophies. But I get why people are like, why can't we just do what the Eagles do? Because they're using these picks to improve their roster and give them a better shot in season and saying, here's where we have deficiencies. Here's where we're going to address them. And in some ways, I respect the aggression that Howie has in doing that.
Well, let me just throw this really quickly in there because I use this comp this week. And so the Lions recently signed Jameson Williams to an extension because that's what they do. They're signing their all their guys. To me, the Phillips trade is the equivalent of saying, we can't afford J-Mo. We let him go in free agency. We're going to get a comp pick for it. And then going, oh, shit, in the middle of the season, we need speed, and trading for Hollywood Brown and sending a third rounder to go get Hollywood Brown, who is speed and talented, but, you know, has some injury history, has some, you know, there's less stability there. Like, that is the equivalent of what the Eagles did. And so we're celebrating Howie Roseman doing what he needed to do. But, like, how would you feel if Brad Holmes was letting his star players going and then trading third round picks for patchwork? I think Lions fans are going to be upset either way, I think. But, like, that's the worst case scenario.
They're probably going to get to that point eventually, though. I just don't think
they're ready. For sure. Yeah. Well, we thought they were going to get there with J-Mo. We did. I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think it's interesting that in the rare occasions that Brad has used draft capital to plug immediate needs, it's worked really well. It's paid dividends. It's not as though he has been burned by that strategy and is now reluctant to do it again. I mean, I think the Za'Darius trade worked really well for that, for this team last year, trading a fifth and then a sixth and seventh pick swap for a player who ended up providing a ton of pressure off of the edge, even if it wasn't the profile of player they preferred. And then I'm glad you referenced the the Carlton Davis move, because even though that was midseason, they did sacrifice a third round pick, which Brad obviously values highly, and he stepped in there and gave them almost a full season's worth of cornerback one play. So he's shown at times the willingness to raid some of his draft capital to plug needs, and it's worked well. But either the market didn't bear what the Lions were looking for yesterday, or they didn't have the capital to go make those moves because of most likely the Tesla trade. But everyone knows that you have to spend two extra third round picks per one-handed catch by a receiver. That's just the going rate. It's the going rate.
Well, before we get to Terron Arnold, and, you know, we'll get to other different storylines. I'm glad we got to. I know it's half the it's worth half the show, though. I mean, this was like the big. I mean, I'm sure people are still going to be talking about this. And by the way, do I think that this trade deadline dictates what happens this weekend? Absolutely not. I think they're going to. And I know this sounds ironic because they were 9.5-point favorites and they lost. They're going to belt to ass the Commanders. Right? Yes. Breaking news. They're going to
be up BTA.
Yeah, BTA. We got to tell you guys about our Sleeper. So here's a quick message from our sponsor.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
All right, let's see. Oh, boom, here we go. Sleeper, proud sponsor of the show as always. You can get a $100 deposit matched up to $200. Use the code HMA. You guys know what Sleeper is. One of the fastest organically growing fantasy platforms in the world, which now features Sleeper Picks, which is a real money product. Connects friends over picks. All you got to do, very simple. Choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players. You can do a pregame. You can do it live. You can do it across different sports as well, not just the NFL. You just pick more or less than the predicted stats. On Sleeper, you can get up to 1,000x payout. Share with your friends. Get rewarded together. They also have a $20 special going on that's aside from the $100 match up to $100. So Sleeper, they'll take care of you as always. So shout out to them for sponsoring the show. And then we got a cameo here.
Special guest.
Oh,
yeah. She heard a Sleeper time. She wanted to make some picks. So, did you got a pick for us this week? Or are we gonna push that off for another week? I was ready to do our over under this week, Jeff.
Oh, don't worry. Hey, the dog and pony show brewing. We got our picks later in the show.
Stick around for that.
News flash. I know I just said belt to ass. I probably just gave away all the anticipation for our picks, but
well, your pick.
My pick, at least. Maybe you guys will be a little more generous than me. But we'll get to a storyline here that trended from the game. Positive, TA looked really good. And by the way, and I got to say, just to provide, because I know people act like this guy just looks like Jeff Okuda, all due respect, until he doesn't. He's actually looked pretty good all year in coverage. That's actually been more so the storyline with TA. It's just been, you know, the penalties or the missed time penalties. For example, when Aiden gets a sack, he just decides to commit one. But in this past game, he looked really good in coverage, and he's coming off of an injury, so you probably could have gave him the benefit of the doubt if he struggled a little bit. But what have you guys kind of made of TA kind of coming back and thriving in that game against the Vikings? Because people say, and we've talked about this plenty of times on the show, young corners take 2 to 3 years to really grow into themselves. Seems like TA is kind of hitting the stride at a perfect time for the Lions here.
Yeah, I don't want to put too much stock in one game, right? Like it's like anything else. Like we're fighting against overreactions all the time in this business, but it was really positive to see him go out there coming off the injury to get his first interception. I think that was huge. I think it was weighing on him. You know, I don't know how many times each of us have individually gone up to his locker and for him to tell us that this was the week he was getting that interception. And you know, sometimes laying out the, like he was trying to manifest it constantly. And I thought the actual play that he made, bad throw, but to make the play the way he did was impressive, right? Like he, that was his ball and he wasn't going to let the pass be completed. And so, you know, he subscribes as many defensive backs do, and maybe it's another manifestation of once one comes, they come in bunches. So, we'll see, but it could be an inflection point for Terry Arnold, a turning point in his young career where the hands that he was getting on passes maybe now start turning into a few more takeaways.
Yeah, he's starting to stack games together, and you know, yeah. I know consecutive games has been an issue for him, but I saw Al Carson, shout out to Al, football guy Al on Twitter. He said since week four, I think that's only
don't do it.
On, but since week four, Lions Aaron Arnold has allowed just a 38.1 passer rating, which is second best among all NFL corners. And he's also forced an incompletion on 21% of targets, which is 12th out of 116. So, you know, he had a good game against the Bengals. He followed it up with a really good coverage game against the Vikings. And those are two good receivers with their starting quarterback in the game. So I think he's starting to stack those games together. Now, the run defense wasn't where it needed to be. Campbell talking about the coverage, he's like, well, the coverage is good. Yeah. Did not say anything about the run game, did not elaborate on that. He's like, the coverage is good. So I think that's what, look, man, I think Terron, you don't have to worry about the run defense with him. That's probably an off game for him. He's pretty good in the run. But the coverage stuff is where you want to see him improve. And he's always been sticky, but it's the penalties, it's getting your head around the little technique stuff that we've been talking about for a year and a half now. If he can string together more of these games, man, like that narrative is going to change on Terron, I think. You're going to see the reasons why they drafted him in the first round. I'm not saying he's going to be a shutdown all-pro guy, but he's going to do exactly what he needs to do in the structure of the defense, as Kelvin Shepard would say. they asked him to play sticky, get in these receivers' faces, force tight window throws, and he's done that in the last couple of games. Now, if he can continue that, then I think we're going to have a different conversation about him, but I need to see a little bit more before I crown him.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Well, a couple of things. First of all, in response to the comments bringing up Trinity Benson and DPJ not working out as trades for Brad Holmes, those were Hail Mary moves. Like Trinity Benson, but we'll take a flyer on this guy. DPJ, he's good for receiver depth. I was talking specifically about moves they made to plug starters. Immediate holes and to bring in starting position players, or starting caliber players. And in those two cases, Smith and Carlton, they worked out. With you guys on
how dare you call DPJ a Hail Mary move? They kept that guy around next year, the following year to be the number three.
Yeah, if he had caught a few more Hail Marys, he might have had a role. I think this is two games in a row where Terron has played well, and I know that the immediate response to their game in Cincinnati was just the opposite because we saw him get beat a couple times. But if you go back and watch most of the plays that he had in coverage that day, he really was all over it, whether he was in coverage on T. Higgins or Jamar Chase. That felt like the first step forward. Then he has the injury that at first seems like it's going to knock him out for the year. Turns out he only misses a couple weeks and comes back and plays really well again last week. I thought three plays kind of highlighted his growth. And the first coverage play he had was on the Vikings opening drive, I believe, where McCarthy looked deep down the sideline to Addison, and TA was straight up one-on-one coverage. He was the only player, as Addison was for the Vikings, on that side of the hash. And He was with him stride for stride. He kind of squeezed him towards the sideline and was never too handsy. And it felt like he certainly would have been last year. And it was maybe a catchable pass, but Tyrion was in really tight, clean coverage and was able to break that pass up. That felt like a sign of growth. He had another rep later where he wasn't even targeted, but he ran with Jalen Naylor on a slant across the middle and was like step for step with him the whole way. McCarthy ended up going elsewhere with the football. And then the pass breakup he had at the goal line on Justin Jefferson might have been one of his best plays of the week. And I think that ended up forcing the Vikings to kick a field goal. But he closed quickly. He got his hand in there. You know, he talked so much about film study. It felt like that was an occasion where that really paid dividends for him. He was really all over it in coverage. And the only play that I think he allowed was the deep ball. And I mean, it was like an intermediate ball to Addison in the fourth quarter. And if you go back and look, like, he's got no safety help in the end zone over the top. And I think he was basically just playing to avoid the home run and ended up allowing like a 15-yard gain, but definitely a step forward for Tyrion. The numbers would look a lot different, Al Karsten. And I love Al Karsten. Like, he puts out some heat on Twitter. But the numbers would look a lot different if McCarthy hits Addison stride and Addison probably turns up field for like a 35, 40-yard game, possibly a touchdown. McCarthy throws it a yard behind him. Was it Naylor or Addison on the interception?
Naylor.
It was Naylor, yeah. Sorry. So if McCarthy hits Naylor in stride, it's a much different outcome, but he throws behind him and Tyrion takes advantage. It was funny, though, because when when Dave Burkett tried asking today about the other area of defense that matters for cornerbacks, that being the run defense, Dan was just like, yeah, no, the coverage was great. The coverage was great. And just completely deflected the question because yesterday on the radio when he was asked about the run defense against the Vikings, he was like, look, it's one player here, it's one player there. And the direct quote was, really, three of the runs was really on one guy. So we'll get that cleaned up. It'll be addressed. It's been addressed. It'll be addressed again. I can't say for certain that he was talking about Tyrion. You can go back and watch the tape of Jones's first run, his second long run, and then maybe one of Mason's long runs in the third or fourth quarter. And you could see that he might have been possibly talking about Tyrion. So things to clean up there, but I'll echo Colton. He's never been afraid to crash in on run support. That's something that's always been a strength of his, even when the coverage wasn't where we want it to be. So I think we're seeing the emergence of, you know, a starting caliber corner, and then that obviously opens up all kinds of possibilities beyond that.
Yeah, I think my biggest concern is we're talking about this since week four stat, and we're pointing out with good reason that it's two games. And why is it two games? It's because injuries, and it's just something different seemingly every time he steps on the field. It was hamstring throughout training camp, then it was shoulder, and then this game he left and got a 20-minute massage on the sideline because he had a back injury. And it's like, I understand they ask a lot of their cornerbacks and they ask him to be physical, and that puts an extra toll on them, but there's a reason he was drafted. He does have the size to handle a little bit more of that stuff, and he's just struggling with some durability stuff right now. I'm not calling him soft. I'm not saying he's fragile or anything like that, but like it's certainly an issue that I'd like to see, you know, more effort put into just finding ways to maintain your body to play four quarters week in, week out.
I can't wait to tell him that you called him soft. That's the first thing that I'm telling him tomorrow. You know, J-Rodge things.
It'll be a lie. We'll run the tape. We'll run the tape.
Film study.
Yeah, well, I think it's time. We got about 5 minutes left. We got to bring up Isaac Tesla because we kind of referenced it at the beginning, talking about the trade that Brad made for Isaac Tesla. And I get some of that, his lack of use. It's not even just him, but Khalif as well. I mean, it has to do with their, you know, running 12 personnel. You need an extra tight end. Brock Wright's, hey, it's the Brock Wright year. He's getting involved a lot more. They're getting an extra body out there blocking. But Dan did mention that he is a player that they do want to have out there a little more, given that he still has, what, three career catches and two of them have went for touchdowns. So he's probably a guy that you want to see what he can do a little more of. I think we've already admitted plenty of times on this show that he's much more NFL ready earlier than we anticipated. that's a guy that you probably want to see more of, given, you know, his versatility. I mean, he's a big guy. He can run block. He can go up and make a grab. He can make one-hand catches. We've seen it with either hand. Sometimes he prefers it, actually, to be honest, watching him play ball. But what's a fair expectations for fans to kind of get a good visual here of Isaac Tesla in the coming weeks? I mean, I don't even know how you run it, because you'd like another tight end out there at times helping out. Yeah. So it's like a give and take, it seems like, at times.
I'd be curious to, and I'd curious is maybe the wrong term, to go revisit our Tesla season predictions, you know, after after they traded Tim Patrick. I think we were all pretty bullish on what Tesla would offer to the Lions this season. I don't know. I feel like I was in that ballpark of 600 yards, and clearly, unless he's got a couple 300 yard games in the tank, I don't know if we're going to get there, but the problem I have with it, the conversation here is they can't even get their better weapons or their more established weapons more consistently evolved. You know, obviously J-Mo had a nice week this week, but we spent weeks talking about why is J-Mo not consistently involved, and Laporta had a good week, but why is Laporta not consistently involved, and David Montgomery. And I'll say this, like, you know, I get that Tesla is the future, and Raymond is, you know, probably toward the end of his time here in Detroit, but like Khalif Raymond is balling. And when I say balling, I'm talking about doing all the things that don't involve catching the ball. That guy is blocking his ass off. And I'm as surprised as anyone. I would never have put Raymond in the bucket of blocker. Effort, would never question that man's effort. But like effectiveness, zero expectations at whatever he weighs, 185, 190 pounds. In the game against the Vikings, very, very few bright spots. There are two plays where Khalif Raymond, by the way, both terrible plays, a blown up screen and a fumble by Montgomery, where Raymond's blocks jump off the tape. He blew up Van Ginkle, like put that man on his ass. And then on the Montgomery run, 3rd and 13, they were going to convert it. And why were they going to convert it? Khalif Raymond blocked two dudes. He blocked one dude into another dude, opening that path for David Montgomery. I get it. We want to see Tesla. He's exciting. He's young. He's the future. But like, they also need to reward Khalif Raymond a little bit more. And by reward him, I mean not a crossing pass that Jared Goff misses by 4 yards into his feet. Like, that guy deserves the ball a little bit too.
Yeah, I wonder if like Jared is a guy that like has favorites, as we know, in this passing offense. And as for everything Justin just pointed out, I think that's why Khalif's on the field, and I think that's why he has John Morton's trust, because of the blocking, the run game stuff. You know, his speed, I think, in terms of stretching the field and running guys off and running guys open for stuff underneath. I think he does all that stuff. I just wonder if he's even a factor in the passing game, because just Jared doesn't look his way. And he's so used to having that big bodied guy out there, you know, to complement J-Mo and Sane and Laporta. And he had that a couple years ago in Josh Reynolds. Last year's Tim Patrick. I think the idea of drafting Isaac Tesla was that you're going to put him out there, and eventually, probably by the end of the season, maybe he can step into that role and be ready. We're halfway through, not at that point yet. How many snaps did you play in that last game?
Three.
Seems like it's trending the opposite direction. So for all the people that were like, I think I tweeted in the preseason, like Isaac Tesla takes over as starter by week blank. And just curious to see all the responses. And everyone was like, one, you idiot. Who's going to start? Like, where are we at now? It's week 9. He's not a starter. He's not being factored into this passing offense. And I do think that element, the big body guy, is missing. And that's something that Jared was very comfortable with, especially in the red zone, just having a guy that can run a slant and win a one-on-one and, you know, just be a target there. And I know they're having success still when they get in the red zone, but I think just having a chain mover like that, that element's sort of missing. And maybe that's the reason why, not the main reason, but it probably plays into the reason why they're struggling on third downs. You can point to a lot of stuff, but I would like to see him more involved. And I know Khalif, if that comes at the expense of him, I think I'm okay with that, because you kind of know what he is at this point. And he is doing things in the run game and springing stuff open. But I would like to see Tesla get more snaps. Like, there's a reason you drafted him. You spent the capital on him. If you think he's ready to contribute, and I think they saw that in training camp where, you know, they're doing their receiver quarterback lines and they're having Jared throw exclusively to Isaac Tesla. And when I see that, that means he's going to be part of the passing offense, but he just hasn't yet. So I would like to see him get more involved. We'll see if that's the case, maybe by late November, if they can make that move. But I think you spent that capital for a reason. Go see what he can do.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's definitely discouraging to see that he's basically right back where he started. I mean, he played three offensive snaps in the season opener against the Packers. And the explanation that week was that, well, he was sick the week prior, and so he wasn't able to get on the field until Friday, which was red zone day, and that limited some of his involvement. And then you look up 2 months later, and he's back to three snaps again in week nine. And the explanation this week, to be fair, when I asked Scotty Montgomery today, was just that the Lions game plan entering the Vikings game was to play a lot of 12 personnel on early downs, one running back, two tight ends, which limits you to two receivers, as a way to calm down all of the different pressures and blitzes that the Vikings throw at you. And that necessarily left Tesla sideline for a lot of the game. And then on third down, they just weren't able to convert enough, just 5 for 17 to extend drive. So, you know, Scotty said, you know, there may indeed have been series or drives where Tesla was on the call sheet, but we weren't even able to get to it because we were three and out, or we were six and out. And that goes back to not having enough plays. And that was part of the JMO conversation as well. But I do agree that there seems to be a place for him in this offense. I do want to dispel one notion. I agree that Tim Patrick was extremely valuable to Jared in a number of ways, kind of as a security blanket that he could look to. But I've seen some fans suggest that the third down issues are in part or in large part because they no longer have Tim Patrick, and that has limited Goff's options. Large part.
Yeah.
Careful there. Like, just to be clear, only nine, I think it was nine when I looked yesterday, nine of Patrick's 44 targets last year were on third down, and six of his 30 catches were on third down. He was making almost all of his plays on first and second down. So while that sounds nice, I think, Colton, like, you're right. He was more of the red zone asset and weapon, and that is exactly what Tesla can be as well. But they do need to find a way to get him involved just to diversify the offense a little bit. And this is maybe the next challenge for John Morton.
You know what part of it might be too is getting away from 12 personnel a little bit more, you know, and that means a reduction of Brock Wright's role, which I know zero people outside of Brock Wright and Sam LaPorta are going to be upset about. But like, you know, if your run game is inefficient with the 12 personnel you're using, then, you know, maybe that is the schematic switch up. You need a little bit more three receiver sets.
Yeah, they're fifth in 12 personnel rate at 35.2%, and they are 25th in 11 personnel rate.
Interesting. So, Colton, I wonder if that partly explains why they have faced so many loaded boxes this year. Like, and I wonder how.
Absolutely.
I wonder if that number that you just referenced is higher this year than it was in years past, because they're clearly seeing a higher rate of 8+ man boxes this year. And Jairaj, I know you've broken down the tape. I'm not trying to dispute what you found, but when you ask offensive linemen around that locker room, they really feel like they're seeing loaded boxes more than ever. Graham today was like, I looked up at one point last week and I'm like, there's nine dudes in the box. Like, how are we going to run the ball here? And I wonder how that number compares this year to last, the percentage of times that they're in 12 personnel, and if that's had an impact on the way that defenses have decided to counter them.
It's actually pretty similar. They were third in 12 personnel rate, 32.2% last year, and 24th in 11 personnel rate. I think the biggest difference, if you're talking about the offensive line and loaded boxes, I wonder if defenses are just daring, like, you know, no Frank Ragnow. Ragnow could take out two dudes on one play. Yeah. Like, he had that ability to kind of win multiple battles at once. They don't have that anymore. So I wonder if defenses are challenging this line and saying, we're going to come at you, see if you can stop us. You know, I wonder if there's more of that sentiment going on this year.
Yeah, and all 12 personnel is not created the same. And I haven't pulled up the numbers, but, you know, whether LaPorta is attached to the formation or flexed out into the slot is different, right? When you have a tight end off of either tackle, now you got seven blockers there, and you play these really, really tight splits with your receivers where JMO and St. Brown are 2 yards off of that formation, like, and motioning through the backfield, like, that is what creates the 8-man box. You've set it up where all the defense is doing is countering you. And as much as you want to bank on your perimeter blockers, and they're very, very good perimeter blockers, you are putting yourself a little bit in a hard place by forcing that execution. Maybe spread it out a little bit more. That's all I'm saying.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah. Or like trade for a really good guard. What?
Disrespect to this Boston College kid they had, whose name I don't know.
I'm sorry. I still can't get over the fact that people point to Tim Patrick. I mean, who is this guy? Tim Patrick. Is this like, it's like he's Megatron or something. People,
you might want to go look at Tim Patrick's numbers this year too. He actually
four catches.
Yeah, he has lesser numbers and has played a lesser percentage of snaps than Tesla has here. The Lions were right to move on when they did.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised they got assets.
Dude, Tim Patrick was telling us in camp he was washed. He's like, I don't know what's going on out here. Like, I trained really hard all summer, and it's just not happening for me.
Yeah.
Could have used his that words, pick they got dude. From the Jags for a guard. I don't know.
Yeah. They missed the essence of Tim Patrick, not 2025.
Yeah.
The aura.
The, I guess it's like the aura, the Tim Patrick aura.
They're for sure.
Definitely what it is, man. Well, we got 4 minutes left. It's time. All right. Our Dog and Pony Show Brewing. Shout out to Kyle, by the way, of course, picks of the week. We were there last week. I got enough of these.
So good.
I mean, I just have too many beers. I mean, it's impossible. I mean, Kyle keeps giving me more beer, which obviously I'm never going to complain about.
Well, here, crack one right now for yourself and crack one for me.
All right. You know what? So give me your guys' picks here. Lions, Commanders, I think they're 9.5 point favorites. That line could move, obviously. I don't know what Frankie Louvu does for that line. He's obviously a really good player. Another good front seven. It's a good test for this O-line. Yeah. But what do you guys make of this matchup? What's your score predictions?
Yeah, I don't like 9.5 is a bit aggressive with the way the offense is right now. It's clunky. I think they got some things to figure out. And I understand the Commanders are decimated at every position. I mean, the Lions' best chance of blowing this game out is making life hell for Mariota, which is certainly possible. He's not Jaden Daniels and not close. But I would be surprised by a blowout. I think we're looking at something like 27, I guess it's covered. 27-17. They covered.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? You say the score like
counted myself.
This is actually my second Commanders game of the season that I've covered. Because when the Lions were in Baltimore, for those that don't know, our former Raiders reporter, Tashawn Reed at The Athletic, he left to go cover the Commanders for the Washington Post. And actually, the Commanders were playing the Raiders in his first game covering the Commanders. So I filled in for him on the Raiders beat at The Athletic with the Lions already in the Baltimore, D.C. area. And I got to watch a 41-24 win over the Raiders via the Commanders and Marcus Mariota, by the way. So they can put up points with this guy. I wouldn't underestimate him. I really wouldn't. He's got some mobility. He can move a little bit. He can still throw it. That said, I'm not very confident in this Commanders team. I don't love their defense. I think it's aging. You know, obviously Jaden is a different type of player. So I'll go, you know, just took my 27. I think the defense will get a touchdown. I think the defense will get a touchdown.
Nice.
And that'll help out, or at least put them in good field position. So I'll go 31.
Uh-oh. Back in the 30s.
Yep. I think this is a get right game. 31-20. Yeah, 31-20. We'll go there.
Oh, I like 11.1. I like that. What's that shaking the head for, Jeff?
I'm just because we always get in these predicaments. You know what? I'm picking
someone's got to pick. For the fans out there, someone's got to pick the Commanders. Otherwise, this is what happens. We all pick the Lions.
We know how this works.
Yeah. I think Jared Goff would have to sleep in, I think, or something, and I could pick the Commanders. I just don't see how they lose this game. And I think they cover. It's funny because, Justin, you had 31. I got 30, or excuse me, 17. I got 17. I have Lions scoring 31. So I have like a mix of kind of both your guys' score. I have 31-17. So they cover. And they score 30 because I'm pulling a TA. I'm speaking it into existence. All right. They're going to score 30. Come on, offense. And maybe it will come from the defense for a touchdown, but give me 31-17 if they cover.
You also have to dream it into existence if you're following the TA protocol. Apparently, he dreamed, right, about his interception the night before the game. So work on that for Saturday night, Jeff. I think this is a good chance for the Lions to get back to doing what they've done really well for 3 years now, and that's defending the run. And they got a little bit leaky against the Vikings last week, and it was kind of unbecoming of that defense. And this has been a really good rushing attack for the Commanders most of the season, and it really hasn't and wasn't just Jaden Daniels. If you look at the yards per carry for the running backs, they're all pretty representative. They're up in the top five among NFL rushing attacks in both yards per game and yards per carry. And, you know, I think the Lions are going to have to kind of bow up here and get back to who they've been defensively for a while. And I think they will. I don't think we saw Aleem at his best last week after we did the week before. And you could tell he maybe didn't play as many run snaps as pass rushing snaps in his first game back. I think we'll see him make a bigger impact in this game against the run. But look, I am no surprise if anyone's listened to me over the past hour. I do have some reservations about the Lions offensive line right now, and I think they'll feel that a little bit on Sunday against what's still a threatening front seven, even if it's an aging front seven. I think the Lions win. I do. But I think the Commanders will cover here. I think we're going to see a 23-17 Lions win in DC wow. on Sunday.
I'm super interested to see how the Commanders' secondary holds up, right? Like no Lattimore. And I have not watched Trey Amos as a professional, but I will tell you his college tape, allergic to tackling, like just absolutely allergic. And so I just, this feels like either a perimeter run game or yak city for St. Brown.
Yeah. Hopefully again, scoring 30.
And maybe, hey, how do you guys think they line up on offense, the offensive line on Sunday? Is it as simple as just plug in Yody for Mahogany and keep everything else as is? Or do they give serious thought to Cologne at center, Graham at left guard? By the way, I do think it's worth mentioning because Dan has made it clear that he is giving some consideration to Cologne at center, which would bump Graham to left guard. And when I asked Graham today if he was open or interested in that, he was like, I didn't know that was – I didn't know we were – no, look, Dan will bring that to him. I am not at all trying to present riffs, but just worth noting that when Graham played left guard last year, it did not go all that well, and I don't think he necessarily loved the transition from right guard to left guard. So as we talk about trying to keep things unified and cohesive, I don't know if that's the best plan of attack for the offensive line.
Am I the only one that heard – Campbell kind of dipping into his sarcastic answers a little bit there? It was like I got distracted watching the wave. Like I didn't take the Graham Glasgow stuff that he was saying at all seriously the way he delivered it. Maybe I'm wrong, but look, Glasgow sucked at left guard, not because he's uncomfortable.
Sorry, J-Rod. He said it on the radio. He volunteered it on the radio yesterday. It wasn't in response to something asked of him. He said Cologne at center, and that would necessarily bump Graham to left guard unless you want to
put there. Gotcha. Look, Glasgow's ankle got destroyed a few years ago. It's got a plate in there. It's got it just got completely surgically repaired. It's stiff, and it's why that's the plant leg for him on the left side, and it's why he struggled so much there. Like, I would be shocked if the Lions go that route. Like, if they're going to put Cologne at center, which I don't think they will, I think it would be Glasgow to the bench in that case. And again, I don't think that's realistic. I think we're looking at Coyote with Cologne being both the backup everywhere, right guard, center, and left guard.
I think Yody probably just because that's the most convenient right now. But
yeah,
hey man, Miles Frazier, his clock started today. I mean, I'd like to see what he can do in a couple of weeks when he's activated. Hey, Mahogany, they threw him out there when he
Tigers, man. So,
I'd like to see it. I don't know. We'll see what he can do. But, yeah, I think Yody's probably the best option.
It's kind of crazy, dude. Frazier was saying today, last week in the locker room, just in a passing conversation, Mahogany came up to him, and I think he knew that his practice clock was going to start soon. And he was like, hey, bro, just stay ready. You never know when your time is going to come. Mm-hmm. And a few days later, Mahogany goes down for the year. And when Miles went to see him in the locker room after the game to check on him, Mahogany was like, see? it can happen like that. And you know, look, I'm afraid we're just going to need time here. Like, this is not just plug him into the offensive line and expect him to play well. But I think there's a possibility that by December, you could feel comfortable about putting him in there. And then maybe that's the boost that you didn't get from the deadline yesterday.
Yep.
Yeah. That's definitely the timeline. I agree.
Yep.
As long as I don't have to watch another screen pass, I'll be all right. I think I'll sleep at night.
You should not watch NFL football then, because that's NFL football, bro.
I just hate screen passes in general.
Left him to LaPorta.
It doesn't fit my narrative.
Yeah, respect. Respect.
All right, we'll get out of here.
Yeah, F the facts.
Yeah, once you have facts, I'm no longer interested. We'll be back next Wednesday. Appreciate you all. Hit the like button on the stream. You guys know what it is, Lions Collective. We'll catch you guys next Wednesday.
Peace. Until then, peace.